Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course I would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course I want to play at the weekend.
Well, well, well. Imagine you showed up at TPC River Highlands on Monday for the playoff between Scottie Scheffler, world number one, and Victor Hovland, a mercurial talent who perhaps hasn't shown us the full range of his abilities just yet. And you're all excited to see this showdown. And 8 minutes later, it's all over with a victory by Victor Hovland, who drained a 7.5-foot putt. Scottie Scheffler followed up, missing a 3.5-4-footer. And that was that. And then you went back to the car park, got into your car or onto public transport or wherever it was, and you went home on a Monday. Felt like a bit of a damn squib in terms of those who showed up. I just sat at home, 2 o'clock, and watched it on TV. I assume that Dave and Gary did the same. Am I wrong in saying that if you're going to have a Monday playoff, it should be at least three holes?
So, like, we should have something written into the rule book whereby if play is concluded on a Sunday, a one-hole playoff is fine, but as soon as darkness falls and the calendar ticks on to the next day, that it automatically becomes a three-hole playoff.
Well, I mean, like I said, the example I gave is you've got the crowd. I'm just thinking of the crowds, Dave. I'm thinking of those people who made the effort to show up at the golf course on a Monday morning, no less, because tee-off time was 9 o'clock. And, you know, they've just settled in waiting. They've seen the drives and all of a sudden, bang, it's over. And they're like,
well,
okay.
How many people were there? Obviously, everybody who was on the golf course was crowded around the 18th hole. I'd imagine an awful lot of them lived in the area.
Maybe. You know? I don't know. Gary, do you think that I don't think it's the craziest idea that if you have a Monday playoff,
it's not.
You should make it three holes.
It's not. I think the players last year with Rory and JJ Spawn worked very well. The reality is the only person that wants to be there on a Monday is the winner.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of get in and get out. There's part of that. It's been a long week. It was a very long Sunday. I do think it is a bit premature, you know, sudden death at that stage. But, it's not a bad idea. Man.
No. A very, very good week for Victor Hovland. Huh?
Was a great hole of golf.
It was a very good
hole. It was.
I mean, two phenomenal drives, and particularly given that Scotty had, it was a hole he couldn't really quite visualize properly in regulation play. But, you know, put it dead center, little cut back onto the fairway. Hovland ripped one straight down the middle. Like the approaches, Scotty's approach was just like, that's as good as it gets. And Hovland follows up and he's just like literally marginally worse. And then you had like the putts. But it was a very good week for Victor Hovland. It was a less good week for Scottie Scheffler. It was a very bad week for Phil Mickelson in what seems to be a very bad year. It was a very good week for Ireland's own Dave Howard of Fota Island, who qualified for the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale, when he finished tied second on 4 under at Dundonald Links yesterday. So we're hoping we'll get him on before the end of the show. But obviously, he's a man very much in demand with a bunch of media sources looking to speak to him. But let's start with the Travelers. Oh, it was a very good week at the KPMG Women's Open as well, or Women's Championship rather. Victor Hovland, a week ago, misses the cut at the US Open, goes to the driving range. He spends 4 hours on the range with no track man, just looking at ball flight. And I was talking to somebody and he was saying, geez, Victor Hovland's just nowhere at the moment. Just completely lost. And sure enough, there he is, Monday, picking up a check for, you know, a couple of million.
3.6, actually.
3.6, Jesus. Anyway, yeah. How fickle a game is this beloved golf of ours, Gary?
It's the most fickle game that anyone can ever consume or play. It just is. And I don't know. I admire, I'm a bit worried with the Hovland thing in that he seems, it's kind of nearly a bit Harrington-esque post the majors or prior to some of the majors, but he's kind of looking for, it doesn't seem, whatever he finds, that he doesn't seem to trust whatever he finds, because he doesn't seem to be able to hang on to it very long.
Yeah.
And he seems to want to flicker either side of it. But you can only commend him for his level of intensity. But you just got to be careful with those things too. I like the idea as well for someone who's so scientific about his approach. You know, getting out there for 4 hours and just watching the ball flight. Like, if you understand your ball flights, it's your best golf coach ever, you know, and then you can relate to Trackman too. But I think a lot of the time, and I use Trackman for lessons, I think it's an amazing piece of kit. There's no denying that. And it's enhanced and improved the high-end levels of the game. It's made coaches better and all of that too. But there's also, you know, a time for feel and real and that kind of thing. So he's kind of exhausting both sides of the channel. But he's a closer, though. When he gets in, like, he's... That's his, what, eighth PGA Tour win, which is a phenomenal achievement.
For sure.
He's been at the top of the tree. He's won the FedEx. And then he went and tried to reinvent the wheel. So he's entertainment. He's a character. I thought the crowds, you know, Norway have really captured the imagination of the World Cup, and they brought a little bit of that to the golf, yeah. And it was great fun and see, you know, in good spirit, really. So, you know, he's box office Hovland, there's no denying, and he's European, so you'll always cheer for him playing on the PGA Tour, and delighted that he, you know, got his win. It's just, Scheffler just seems to run into someone every other week.
I see. Dave, as Gary said, like, I mean, obviously, like all golfers, they rely on technology and the numbers. But this week, he seemed not to. He instead carried a copy of Being Well, A Journey into the Heart of a Sporting Life, and then had this kind of philosophical explanation where he goes, look, technology is neither good nor bad. Take nuclear technology. It can power cities or make bombs.
Yeah, look, whatever works. Yeah. I'd say, as Gary alluded to there, he has pretty much tried everything to try and make something work. But, and he'll probably be one of those players that will always be tricking around in some way with his swing. And but his game has its limitations. Obviously, we've talked at length over the years about his skills or lack thereof around the greens, and his chipping ability maybe isn't elite level. But it's no question that when he's tuned in with his swing, his iron play and his ability off the tee is world class,
yeah.
And he is a brilliant golfer to watch because he goes hard at every single shot, and it's an unorthodox swing, which I love as well. Like, he's one of these collegiate graduates that come out and you know, the swing that he's been born and grown naturally hasn't been coached out of him, so we don't want every golfer to look the exact same. He always seems to have a smile on his face. I love his sort of half American, half Norwegian accent. The crowds always seem to react to him. And he played some brilliant golf on the back nine there on Sunday. And look, he was up against an out-of-sorts Scottie Scheffler, whose sheer competitiveness and ability to scramble was the only reason that Hovland didn't win pulling up, really. But that made for really exciting golf. I don't know how many par putts or what footage of par putts Scheffler made on the back nine.
It was unbelievable. Yeah.
It was incredible. And he probably had no right to be in it. Like, but it was a really good back nine of tournament play. It was so entertaining.
The even for a guy, and chipping has been his Achilles heel for quite a while. But the chip on 15 Hovland made was absolutely superb. overall play. Let's talk about Scheffler. Like, look, obviously started with 64 and a 60. So it looks like, okay, Scotty Scheffler, whatever it is that ailed him is gone. Thought on Sunday, as you said, Dave, like he was lucky on 10, caught the tree. Now, he got birdie, but like still on the 15th, he had a left miss that basically, like, I don't know how it didn't find water. Like, it's just some sloppy play and some scrambling that, look, it brought him into the playoffs. So, look, he's a fighter. He's dogged. He's the world number one for a reason. I'm not disputing any of those things. But, like, I don't know. There's a fragility to Scheffler's play that we haven't seen for 3 years. And we talked about it last week, so I feel like we're just going to repeat ourselves.
Yeah, we probably are going to go over some old ground because his A game just isn't there at the moment. Look, he did outscore Hoplin by a shot on the last day. Like, and you know, it wasn't quite what Morikawa was producing in behind them, shooting 61. And obviously, Patrick had a brilliant final round as well, as did Wyndham Clark in behind them. Guys who are actually, who have shown really good form lately, continue that into the weekend in Connecticut. But he is so good that his C game is still, particularly in a non-major week, obviously, his C game is still good enough for him to be in contention. He was just clinging on there, but he still shot 68. And that's how good he is. You know, he played the back nine at 2 under par, but so much of that was relying on his ability to get up and down or to hold par putts from 8, 10, 12 feet. And you know when you're watching him that you're not watching the real deal. You're not watching Scotty Scheffler at his absolute best. And look, even in the playoff, despite the stats that they were throwing out there about how he had played 18 over the in regulation, he hits the middle of the fairway, and when he drove the ball as well as he did, I was saying that he's going to get to hit first, and that's going to put an awful lot of pressure on Victor Hovland.
Yeah.
But then that's totally flipped because he hits his second shot so well that it's almost certain that Hovland is going to get to putt first, which was the case. And the pressure that Hovland put on him, and obviously he used every millimeter of the width of the cup. Mm-hmm. Get his putt in, but I know Scheffler's putt brushed the hole on the way by, but Scheffler of last year holds that.
See, I agree with you, Dave. Gary, like, look, I'm entering to very dangerous ground here. Scheffler hit the putt through the break. I know. He hit the putt through the break. Like, he saw that it broke big left to right. He obviously watched Hovland's grab the right edge. And it just seems to me is that, like, he just, like, Scheffler of last year never puts that much. Like, he's a dead weight putter. Like, he just lets it drop in. And it just felt as, like, what are you doing? Like, blamming it through the break there.
Well, I guess he looked that it moved a lot at the very end, dead weight. So he's kind of gone to bully the break. And he's obviously pulled it a little bit. Yeah. Because you can't hit it outside the hole at that pace. It's just so. He's put a bad stroke on it, and it sums up golf. He's hold everything really to stay in contention, and then the next morning, a fresh day, he get out, and he got a bit spooked, and it was a match play situation. But his levels are still you know, like. But the thing, like, he realistically will have his A game, his proper A game, 3 or 4 weeks in the year, and then he's a B plus the rest of the time. And it's just the standard at the moment. Like, there's always someone. Wyndham Clark did it the previous week. You know, Fitzpatrick got him. Other guys have got him. Like, he could still, you know, quite comfortably be on a 5-6 win season already.
But it's really only on one. Well, I mean, he's loads of seconds, hasn't he?
And he's only on one. Like, he's relatively miles ahead in the FedEx.
Yeah.
And he's playing a lot. You know, you compare that to Rory's season where, you know, he got his Masters and he's kind of smelling the roses and he's
down resting. Tools for the rest of the year.
Well, not quite. But I do think the age profile is a huge thing on it. Like, McIlroy has a lot more miles on the clock than Scheffler has.
Yeah, true.
And Scheffler still has a huge enthusiasm to kind of win every week. Not that Rory doesn't, but they're just in different places. So it's kind of a tricky thing to compare. But you've got all these other guys now are pumped up about trying to beat Scotty, which, you know, maybe because he hasn't won as much as he probably should have this year. The fear factor is not, because that was Tiger's big thing. Like, Tiger had a shot and a half on the field, gone out on a Sunday, really. And the guys nowadays just seem to, like, Hovland was up for it and excited, as Fitzpatrick was in Arbortown, and Cam Young was, and, you know, so there's always, he's been a little unfortunate. I wouldn't nitpick too much. I think Birkdale will suit him down to the ground. He's defending his Open Championship. He is very close. You know, as we were saying in previous pods, that, you know, the slow start, and he opens up with, what, 64, 60. So,
yeah, certainly not.
He's very good. It's just that you need a little slice of luck to win these things. Doesn't matter how good these guys are, unless he goes on a stupid thing like he did at the American Express.
Yeah.
The margins are so tiny.
So,
and that's why guys, you know, don't only win maybe once a year as a norm.
Honourable mentions to a couple of other players, a few others. Wyndham Clark finished tied fifth, you know, not bad after his US Open win. Colin Morikawa, Dave, you mentioned him, amazing 61. Like in, well, what was, like, the weather conditions were tough. The bunker shot in 18 was unbelievable. I thought the Fitzpatrick brothers, there's a nice little, like, the two of them almost going head to head, like, to see who's going to finish. Like, look, Matt finished fourth. Alex finished tied seventh. So between them, they'll walk away fairly happy. The Fitzpatrick collective bank balance has been
another
well served.
$600,000 for Alex Fitzpatrick. Yeah. They both shot six on the final day. Look, it was a star-studded leaderboard, like five major champions in the top nine.
Yeah.
And Hovland is like a Ryder Cup star and a serial winner and one of the great players in the game at the moment. Certainly once he finds his consistency, he would be. And even for just slightly further down the field, you've got the likes of Sam Burns and Tommy Fleetwood and Justin Thomas and Cantlay. And wasn't a bad weekend for Shane Lowry either. A couple of hundred thousand.
Actually, we should mention him. Very nice. Like, look, you'd be disappointed. He had three bogeys on the backside on Sunday. But that notwithstanding, with Dermot Byrne back on the bag, we don't know how long that relationship will last. But whatever. Clearly, there was like caddy bounce, maybe just, you know, new information or old information delivered in a fresh way, whatever it was, that clearly Shane looked like in good nick.
Yeah, maybe enjoying his day a little more, despite those bogeys on the back nine, which are obviously pretty costly because, if he turned up early, he's shooting up the leaderboard and he's probably walking away with $600,000 or $700,000. But not that the money's necessarily an issue for Shane, but certainly the FedEx Cup points are, because he's in real dropping outside the world's top 50, and we know what the repercussions of that can be. But you just want him to be desiring to be on the golf course again. Like when he's spoken about his relationship with golf over the last few weeks, it's not really healthy, you know, where he's kind of saying things like, you know, me and golf aren't getting on very well at the moment. Shane has always been at his best when he's free-flowing and freewheeling and enjoying being there and enjoying the atmosphere and the tournament feel and getting on with his caddy, as well as his game being in good nick. So hopefully he's able to take a bit on that. But like, I think the Travelers Championship is one of the more underrated events on the tour. Because it is in this, you know, whirlwind period of the season, which is just claustrophobic with signature events and major championships, and it's all very difficult.
On that, Gary, so was it last year, Rory said that he didn't think that TPC River Highlands was deserving of a signature status type event, the golf course itself. But can both two things be true? I thought the event was terrific. Good crowds, a deep field, especially the week after a major. It's no easy feat to attract top players the week after a major event. And yet the course itself, is Rory right that the course itself is kind of not really a great course, even though the event itself was pretty good?
Possibly, but, you know, it's always produced good drama. And the only thing is, you're the week after Shinnecock Hills, so the last thing these guys would desire is to get beaten up again for 4 days. So, you know, I think obviously the test is what it is, but it's also reflected too, and they can let their hair down a little bit and kind of go for it, whereas the previous week was just hanging on. So I wouldn't imagine, scheduling wise, why would you want to stick on a, you know, an Arnold Palmer, let's say, the week after a US Open? guys that end up in a rubber room. So, and the scoring wasn't mental. You know, it was very, very low, but these guys are very, very good. But I think it's, you know, we've seen some, was it Keegan Bradley beat Tommy, Spieth hold out of the bunker 1 year. It's always been a, you know, a cool event and well supported. It's just a tough date.
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult to get everyone, and hence the signature event, and that's why they're all there, obviously. But I think it's good entertainment. I think it was Scheffler did his duty, really. You know, he was the best player in the world. He was there to the very death. He's not going to win them all. The math of it, you know, like if he has a 4% career, that's about it. So, and Tiger had a 10% career. So you just can't win them all. But I do think it was a decent week. And from the Lowry point of view, definitely got a bounce from Dermot. Nice to see them back doing well. And he's home now for a little break for a week, and then he's got Scotland and Birkdale to look forward to. So that'll give him another bounce too. And I think getting back on a bit of Lynx golf will free him up a little bit too.
Do we know
it is a bit drafty.
Is Dermot Byrne still going to be in his bag? Do we know?
Oh, yeah, I'd say that's for the foreseeable future, yeah.
Fair enough. Heran Ryu, she won her first major championship at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. Sorry, I referred to it as an open earlier. And following the new established tradition of hosting women's majors at big courses. So this was at Hazeltine. Finished on 7 under par, so she was 3 clear of Ina Yoon. I thought it was really, really good. I thought it was great. Obviously Nelly Korda is the story of the year in golf. She kind of moved within 2 shots of the lead, but then, look, got to the 11th tee and, you know, and it went into the water along with her hopes. But I saw Brooke Henderson grab the lead for a little bit. I thought it was a good major. Lads, any thoughts?
Sort of had a US Open feel to it, didn't it?
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Oh, wait. No one was really able to get things going. It wasn't like a nails hard golf course on a Sunday afternoon, but the course was just keeping them all in check. You know, she won with 1 under par final round, and Korda could never really get things going, nor could anybody else really. I just was reading this morning, she changed her putter midway through the tournament. That's a ballsy call. And it's obviously helped her massively to get to where she wanted to be come Sunday. But no one was really tipping her in the run-up to the event.
No.
Her major championship record's incredible. Like, I think she's already had 6 or 7 major championship top tens. Like she flew under the radar despite herself, which maybe let her play with a little less pressure on the Sunday. We've already talked about this, given the Riviera situation, that it's amazing that these golf courses are now holding women's major championships, because they're on courses that we're already familiar with, and we can recognize some things about them as we're watching it, and also we're maybe watching the golf course as it was designed to be played before, you know, the men started gouging the ball 340 yards off the tee. But I'd say it was a decent major week rather than anything massively memorable, but she has a brilliant golf swing. You could watch it all day. There's a lovely tempo to it. As is the case with many of the Koreans, they do seem to be schooled in a similar way, because, you know, whatever way you break her swing down, it's just the same tempo, really smooth, great to watch. And now that she's got the first major under her belt, you'd be shocked now if she goes through 5 or 6 years without winning another one.
Yeah. Right. I'm just conscious that, unfortunately, today we don't have a huge amount of time. So I'm kind of just rattling through this. The other big news story of the week was one that took place very much off the golf course, where Alan Shipnuck published an article on Phil Mickelson's private peccadilloes. It followed the revelations that he'd been expelled from a golf course for untoward behavior to a staff member, and that I saw that the whatever it was, the committee or whoever it was, the officers of the club, went out in the middle of his round. He was out just playing, and they asked him to leave the course and then promptly expelled him from the course. Phil Mickelson's lawyers claimed that there had been misunderstanding, but look. And then Shipnock publishes this article. I don't know, lads, if you've had a chance to read it. I mean, look, the revelations are sordid and they reveal a man really kind of low moral standing, I'm going to say. You know, some particularly in relation to Pat Perez's wife. And Shipnock clearly has his bona fides here. Like, he's done his due diligence. He's got it's all backed up. And I presume it's lawyer proof, the story, because some of the allegations are, like, you know, scandalous, if not, you know, nothing illegal or anything like that, but fairly scandalous suggestions.
Yeah, Gary, do you want to lead off on that?
Yeah, I think everyone knew for years there was kind of two Phils. I don't think to this level, but it was always, there was a rude joke comparing Amy and Phil, which is not for public consumption, but you know, that smile was never that real at all. And there was a huge cover-up in the sense his golf was so spectacular. He was such a showman. He was an entertainer. And everyone loved him because of the way that he played the game. But socially, it's turning into the X-Files, really. And it's an unbelievable fall from grace, which will not be of surprise to a lot of people kind of inside the industry. Because, you know, lots of people knew for many, many years. Unlike Tiger, really. The whole Tiger scandal was very... He kept it under wraps a lot more than what Phil did. But, the Pat Perez thing is...
Yeah, so he basically was hitting on Pat Perez's wife in front of Pat Perez. And then, but under the auspices of, hey, no, we're all friends. We're just all hanging out together. And then he was... You know, he basically sent a naked photograph of himself to Pat Perez's wife, and that obviously, and Pat Perez hates Phil Mickelson now, and but the other stuff in there, there's like, I mean, whatever. Look, it's almost, some of it is almost comic in its, you know, like the idea of paying one of the caddies in the club to drive around the golf course with his phone because Amy was tracking his phone so Mickelson could step out and you know, whatever, be visiting with other people he shouldn't be visiting with. And look, the picture being painted here, Dave, is one of a man who cheated on his wife. I can't imagine he's alone in this. He is a very successful sports star and it seems to go with the territory. Sounds very cynical of me, but you know, I don't think anyone should be that surprised. But more than anything, it's just another nail in the coffin of Phil Mickelson's reputation. So, like, as Gary says, this spectacular fall from grace that went from being like a beloved, super successful, you know, golfer of his era type status to just, you know, this sleazy old man, like with just low morals and just,
ugh. Yeah, it's complete, I think, his fall now.
It is.
You know, his reputation is just torched beyond belief from where he was when he walked off the 18th green at the 2021 PGA Championship. Like, compare where he stood in the game there with everything that was going to bring as the oldest winner of a major and into the six-time major winning club. He was beloved around Augusta. He was going to be the ceremonial starter. He was going to be a Ryder Cup captain. He was going to be, you know, sort of up there with Palmer and Nicklaus when it came to, you know, earning millions and millions of dollars off the course long after his retirement. He probably there was a future role as a broadcaster sitting in the booth for NBC or CBS. Like, all of that's gone. He's persona non grata on the PGA Tour because he almost single-handedly tried to set fire to the entire tour. And his personal life is now obviously even more public than it was after the release of Alan Shipnock's book, which was a brilliant read. But some of the salacious details in this article. And, you know, I read an interview with Alan Shipnock. He was asked why did he feel he needed to kind of bring this to light. And he's talking to people who are insisting that this guy needs to be stopped. You know, this guy needs to be... someone needs to put the brakes on him because he's upsetting people. He's invading the lives of people in ways that he really should not be. And the stuff with Perez is just beyond belief. Like, but it just speaks of a real, and he's not the first person we've talked about in these terms, just speaks of an elite athlete that is just really self-entitled and has been told for so, so long how unbelievably amazing he is. And every room he's walked into for the last 30 years, he's felt that he's the cleverest, the funniest, the best golfer, the most athletic, the person with the best ideas. And no one has ever second-guessed him on that. So he has become so self-entitled, he thinks he can do whatever he wants. And a lot of his reputation was built on this, you know, all American wholesomeness. You know, we remember when, you know, he said, no matter come what may, in one of the US Opens, that if Amy gives birth, he's going to be there. You know, Bones McKay was carrying the beaver in the bag, so that as soon as that went off, Mick Phil was gone. We thought, isn't that great? He's putting the birth of his child and his wife before his golf career. And obviously, Amy went through her own health issues. She had a battle of cancer. And when she was first back at Augusta National after getting the all clear and Phil was winning, I think, in 2010, that looked like an amazing moment as well. And it's a marriage where one of the people in the marriage is being tabs on by the other, and he's handing his phone to young caddies to whiz around the golf course so that to deceive his wife and to think that he's out playing 18 holes. It's mad.
Let me ask you, when the revelations came out about Tiger Woods and golf was engaged in collective pearl clutching, and everyone was like, oh my, oh my. I mean, I and many of us like felt very uncomfortable with the idea of like a general public taking a prurient interest in what is effectively the private lives of somebody. And Tiger Woods was, more than anyone else, an incredibly private person. I take your point, Dave, that Phil Mickelson liked to parade himself as the all-American, good dad, good husband, a lot of it, whatever. But ultimately, this is Phil Mickelson's private life. And look, if he's a dickhead and an asshole in private, that's fine. But like, is it ultimately any of our business?
Well, is any story?
I don't think it's interesting. Yeah.
Like, he sold an awful lot of merchandise, won an awful lot of sponsorship deals on the back of his reputation.
Okay. Yeah. I'm putting the question out, because ultimately is that like, I read the Shipnook piece. Obviously, it's very well researched. He did his due diligence. Like, he obviously spoke to people. He did the hard yards like a journalist should. But one of the takeaways I had, other than, look, like any of those revelations which Shipnook didn't make, the ones around his behaviour in the golf course that led to his expulsion, and then he also alludes later on to when he got caught up in that, in the, you know, the insider trading scandal from a couple of years ago, that felt all. But Shipnook, that's not Shipnook's revelations. They're just kind of incorporated into this piece. But when you actually take those out, the guts of the piece are really about, like, you know, the private lives of a very rich, entitled, narcissistic, egomaniacal sports figure, you know, and it just feels to me like there's a lot to this.
I know, but the bottom line on it, Fiona, is like, it's all been a fraud. That's just the reality.
You started off, Gary, and sorry, I'm not being devil's advocate as much as trying to see it for, like you said it, people who know golf and people inside golf, none of this doesn't come as a surprise to any of them.
No, but yeah. It's, and you know, how do you judge a sports person? Is it, you know, on the field of play and that's it? I think it's incumbent on a lot of these guys when you're, you know, in at the very, very top of a sport that it's, for some people, it's, you know, you're a hero to a lot of people. So you've got huge sponsorship contracts with blue chip companies that don't allow their staff to behave in a certain way. So when you're an ambassador for that brand, I think you're, you know, it's incumbent on you to behave accordingly. Mm. That's not to say that we've not seen a lot of skullduggery from people in boardrooms either. That's just the human nature and it's life. But Phil was, you know, wholesome and sweet and everything was pure. And, you know, his wife was battling cancer and, you know, there was a huge sales pitch, which you can't deny and all that kind of stuff. And if you think about the level of global stardom he's had and how revered he would be in his home club, for someone to walk out on the fairway to ask him to leave, like, that's a mind-boggling
fall. That is absolutely, and particularly, so if that is, I don't know, I can't remember the exact term, and I want to be careful from a legal perspective, but like, it's unwelcome attention or whatever, inappropriate behaviour, whatever, that borders on the criminal. So, I mean, obviously, that's an entirely... That's a standalone issue. And Dara, might I add, I have no sympathy for Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson doesn't deserve any sympathy. Like, he clearly comes across as a deeply unlikable, unpleasant individual who feels a sense of entitlement that people, you know, that he can do whatever he wants with people because he is who he is. But I guess my point I'm making is that, like, I don't think he's alone in this, unfortunately. And
I actually don't think we'll probably ever see him compete again.
No.
Which, so that's that's probably an even money shot, which is...
Really sad, isn't it?
Which is really sad, because... And it's, you know...
Entertaining golfer of the last 40 years, and we're not going to see
him. Oh, no. I mean, I caddied in the Walker Cup in 1991 when he was, maybe a 19, 20-year-old kid. Jay Siegel, who I caddied for... I think we played two practice rounds with Mickelson, and it was like being on a movie set.
Anyway.
You know, he was phenomenal, and then he caused his own issues that week. Maybe we should have known then what we're now becoming aware of today.
Right. Okay. Dustin Johnson.
On a happy note.
On a happier note. Dustin Johnson, well, there's not so much happy for Dustin Johnson, who, despite saying that he has been playing better golf recently, he did confirm that he wasn't going to try to qualify for the Open Championship this year. Now, that's a disappointment for certainly, because I think fans of Dustin Johnson, look, he's not what he was, but he, you know, he still brings someone. But someone who will be at Royal Birkdale this year is Dave Howard of Fota Island, and who qualified for the Open, finished tied second at Dundonald on -4, shot a 69 and a 71. And bear in mind, there's only 5 spots available. Happy to say Dave joins us now. Dave, congratulations. What an absolutely brilliant accomplishment.
Thank you. Can you hear me here?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Good.
So, Dave.
How are y'all?
Oh, very good. Listen, Jesus, not as good as you, though. What an amazing feeling it must have been.
Yeah, pretty cool. Still setting in, I suppose. But yeah, it's pretty cool to get it done. And yeah,
so
pretty much.
So I was following you like on the live updated leaderboard. And at one point I saw you were first about halfway through your round and you were sitting on 5 under. And I thought, Jesus, the only thing here, like barring a spectacular collapse, is it like done and dusted? And then a friend was straight away going, Jesus, don't say anything until he gets to 18. How was it? Like, what were the conditions like? What did the challenge feel like? You know?
Yeah, it was a tough test. Great course. Conditions were pretty tough, to be fair. Got kind of showers on and off all day and a nice breeze. But yeah, it's a serious test of golf. You can't really be off really at all. So played really nice golf. Made it a bit stressful coming in, making a double bogey on the 16th. But happy to make a couple of pairs coming in, and it was enough to get it done.
Ah, listen. Sorry, Gary, you were going to say something?
Who did you play with for the 2 rounds, David?
I was with Ryder Cowan, the amateur who was top in the US Open, but he pulled out after 16 holes. He had enough. It was his first time playing links golf. He was struggling a small bit, you could say. But he's over for Palmer Cup now in Tralee next week, I think. Also played with Jack McDonald from Scotland after Gent, and he also qualified as well. So with a nice 2-ball, even though it was very slow, but yeah, it's good.
David, congratulations. It's a brilliant story, and the list of Irishmen that you're joining at the Open in a couple of weeks' time is just unbelievable. Look, an awful lot of people wouldn't have heard of you before you achieved this incredible feat, but so equally they won't know that at a young age you were diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, and you're obviously an ambassador for the charity around that in Ireland, which is brilliant. But can you just give us an idea as to sort of how... how that's kind of affected your life, and if in what way it still continues to affect your golf game, and what people may not know just watching you play, that what sort of hurdles you're trying to get over.
Yeah, I suppose mainly is medication and kind of trying to stay fit and healthy, so to kind of stop getting infections and stuff. But in the last kind of 6 years, with the advancements of medication, it's after improving massively, life-changing, you could say. So diagnosed late at the age of 7, and yeah, I suppose from there until 2019, it's kind of a rough road, kind of in hospital a lot, getting IV antibiotics, antibiotics very occasionally. And since the new modulators in 2019, I'm going to say, yeah, it's been a huge change. Still a lot of medication, still a lot of things to kind of keep healthy, but it's been huge, I suppose. Back in teenage years, Googling CF is saying kind of mid-20s as life expectancy. So to be here in my mid-20s, doing what I'm doing, and yeah, it's mad to think about, but yeah, feel pretty lucky.
Anyone who has played with you, as myself and Gary did when we played Castle Martyr last year at this stage, wasn't it? Will know that you're a prodigious driver of the ball. Like, even Gary Murphy, who is a very, very good driver of the ball, was like watching your drive sail over his. But you won the West last year. Clearly, your golf game.
The East.
Jesus Christ. Sorry, lads. Apologies. The East. Oh, my God. Like, your golf game is clearly in very, very good nick. Like, when you're looking at the fields that are looking to qualify for the Open, and it is, like, the best players around, like, what do you see, which part of your game do you see goes, yeah, I've got this part of my game and is as good as anything I've seen?
Well, DJ was actually supposed to be in my field in Dundonald, but he pulled out. I might say thankfully, but yeah. But I suppose everyone can hit the ball very well. It's kind of just, I think mostly short game making putts is huge, which I thankfully made a few putts this week. And yeah, I wouldn't see a huge difference really. It's just, yeah, I suppose putting is just massive. I think everyone can hit the ball, and mentally is another huge thing. Having a good mindset. Yeah, pretty much.
Have you had a moment to even consider what your ambitions for a successful week at Birkdale are?
No, I haven't had much time to think about it yet. Still hasn't sunk in, but I think I'm just going to treat it like a normal tournament week, try to prepare properly and do what I normally do, and just take it one shot at a time and see where that leaves me at the end.
You know, he's in the limelight at 5 minutes and he's already thrown out all the usual golfing cliches.
He's a pro. It's like, look, Dave, you're going to have to get used to it. I realise you played with like golfing stardom when we were in Castle Martyr and Gary Murphy, but you know, there's a good chance you might be paired with like somebody who's even better known than Gary on World Golf.
No, I'm well prepared now. Well prepared after Castle Martyr, and I played with Gary last week at the K Club too.
That's right.
I think I beat him in a couple of long drive comps, but we won't mention that.
They're building
a Tesco on the K Club between my drive and David's drive on the second hole.
Very good. Look, Dave, I appreciate you're a busy man, and I know that a lot of media outlets are going to want to talk to you. So, look, I just want to take the opportunity to say absolutely brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Well done. It's such a great fillip for yourself, for everybody at Fota Island, obviously, because I know some of the lads that you play with who are absolutely over the moon at your success. But look, hopefully we'll be talking to you between here and then, and if not between here and then, we'll talk to you after Birkdale. But listen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, and well done as well, Gary, the other day. Fair play to you.
Thank you very much. Congratulations, Dave. Have fun.
Did you talk about that yet? No,
he hasn't. Of course he does. Gary Berry's the lead on everything.
I was keeping that quiet, David.
Yeah, I thought I'd bring it up.
Your story is much bigger. No, I'm delighted for you. Enjoy the Open. It's an amazing tournament. Just go over and do your normal stuff. Try get a few practice rounds with a few of the Irish guys. They'll help you out, no doubt.
Yeah, hopefully you get a few nice practice rounds and have a good week.
Cheers, Dave.
Thanks, guys. Cheers. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
Gary, what's your news?
Gary.
I got through a qualifier in London yesterday for the British Senior PGA Championship. So there was 100 old grizzly souls, and five of us got through, and I finished tied second, shot 66. So
for the love of Christ. Happy, well done.
Happy days.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Thought we'd finish on a positive note after all that shite about Mickelson. So.
Ah, yeah, it's just... But that's brilliant, Gary. Well done.
No, I was delighted. I played lovely, and a bit similar to Dave, really. I had a nice pairing, so I played with Sam Little, who won it. He shot 65, and David Park, and played lovely, and my short game was really tidy coming in. I made some key up and downs. I was 6 for 6 on up and downs, so anytime you do that, you're doing well. So really excited to go up to Aberdeen. It's a big tournament on the Legends Tour, and it avoids me kind of hanging around, see will I get in on category, so I can plan for it. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to get my old pal might come out in the bag and bow and caddy for me for a week, so could be a bit of fun.
Nice one. Right, well, on that happy note, we're going to leave it there. As always, my thanks to Dave and Gary. Listen, both thank you and congratulations. Great stuff. That is a nice high to finish on. The news of yourself and also Dave's news, because, look, I mean, listeners to the pod will know we hung out with him last year in Castle Martyr. He joined us on the pod. He's a class act. He's a class act off the course, and he's an absolutely brilliant golfer on the course. So I'm just really, really excited. Now I know who I'm rooting for at Birkdale. Right, lads. Cheers. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little JD starter kit right here.
Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.